Welcome back to our first episode of the new season of In Your Nature podcast. Absolutely delighted to be here, Niall. What's the story?
I'm delighted as well, Ricky. In Your Nature is produced in partnership with the Heritage Offices of Laois and Offaly County Councils, supported by the Heritage Council and the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, and is edited by Kieran O'Connor. Just to let our listeners know, this is literally the very first time that you and I have sat in the same room to do the podcast together. So I'm doubly excited.
It is. And if that wasn't sort of absolutely crazy in our world at the minute, is we have a third person in the room with us.
Yeah, we do, absolutely. So our colleague Brian Burke is here. He's our Irish Garden Bird Survey guru. We know a lot of you listening to this take part in the Irish Garden Bird Survey, and we're hoping a lot more of you will as well. So we're delighted to have you here, Brian. It's nice to welcome you here and hear all about the survey.
Great to see the two of you, and great to be here for the in-person, the first in-person podcast.
The topic is garden birds and the garden bird survey, so really delighted to be talking about it. Really good time of year to be speaking about the garden bird survey and tee it up, because it's coming up. So just, I suppose, give me, what is the loose definition of a garden bird?
To me, it would be any bird that uses a garden regularly. So everyone's going to think of your robins and your blue tits and your finches and all those kind of species. They would be species that evolved to live in woodlands and woodland edge and hedgerows and stuff like that. And obviously, gardens very much replicate that sort of habitat. Looking through the Garden Bird Survey results and my own experience as well, you know, there's species like gulls that come to gardens in parts of the country very frequently. You know, on an annual basis, Perrins Garden in Roscommon would have lesser blackback gulls and black-headed gulls in the summer. In the winter, we get, you know, black-headed gulls and herring gulls in 5 and 10% of gardens, respectively. So the fact that they regularly use gardens, I would consider them garden birds in a way as well.
Would you agree with that, Niall, or what's your feeling?
Very much so. I think there's no standard definition of what a garden is. So I suppose so long as a bird is making use of that space in some sense, then it's a garden bird. That would include birds of prey flying over, looking potentially for meals down below. But I suppose the very mere fact that a bird is flying over your garden isn't enough, though, to make it a garden bird, is it?
No, I suppose it all comes down to using the garden in some active way. So yeah, if it's maybe flying over the garden, you might have hooper swans, you know, in the winter, if you're lucky, that fly over your garden, or a lapwing or something like that. I wouldn't call them garden birds. We do get occasionally lapwing if there's very heavy snow for a couple of days in the winter. Lapwing might end up in some gardens, but I wouldn't consider them a garden bird. But yeah, birds of prey looking over your garden, a buzzard soaring or a kestrel hovering or something like that, I would consider that using the garden and therefore fit that definition of a garden bird.
Would it be fair to say, Brian, that garden birds would generally be among our commonest species? I know some would be rare, but they tend to be doing fairly well. And if that's the case, why do we bother surveying them at all?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some species, you know, that top the rankings every year: robins, blackbirds, blue tits. And then there's other species, you know, further down, but that, you know, consistently, you know, doing well. The numbers are quite stable. It's important to monitor the common birds as well. The common birds arguably tell you more about the environment and changes in the environment than some of the rarer birds. You know, you can never take things for granted either. So I'm sure we'll be talking about the greenfinch later on. Greenfinch used to be one of the most common birds in Irish gardens. No one foresaw any problems with greenfinches. And then all of a sudden, around the turn of the century, this parasite started affecting their populations. And, you know, we've probably half as many greenfinches now as we did 15, 20 years ago. So, you know, you can't take things for granted. You know, continuous long-term monitoring, very important.
I have an interesting question that just popped into my mind. Would there be any species in Ireland that didn't exist if we didn't have gardens?
Oh, that is a good question.
Like, if gardens, I don't know, cease to exist, if we concreted over all our gardens in the morning, what would be the first sort of two, three species that would just vanish?
I'm not sure if any species would just vanish. We do see some species, like blackcap, for example, that use urban areas quite a lot. You know, in the winter, they actually use urban areas seemingly more than rural areas. They've definitely changed their behaviour over the decades, in part due to feeding in gardens and stuff like that. So it might influence them, or if we had a time machine and took away all the gardens at the right moment in time, we mightn't have blackcaps to the same extent in winter as we have them now. I'm struggling to think of anything, Niall.
No, I think you're right, Brian. I think that there's no species that is completely dependent on gardens within Ireland, but I think that there are species that certainly get a real boost for them, particularly when cold weather hits. That's when you see the influx coming into gardens of some of our migrant thrushes, like redwings and fieldfares, birds that normally wouldn't really be dependent on gardens to any great extent, but then when hard weather hits, sometimes it's the difference between life and death. I think obviously so certain species become a lot less common. So birds like you know, the blackbird, the robin, birds like that have adapted to be around humans and to take those spaces. places. Their numbers would undoubtedly fall, but they'd still remain common enough in woodlands and farmland edges and so forth as well. So they wouldn't disappear completely.
No, goldfinch, I suppose, is another one that has definitely benefited from garden feeding over the years. But yeah, I think you're right. The distribution or the amount we see them and come in contact with them would change.
So we hit on the challenges facing greenfinches and how a sort of population can just, you know, take a dive pretty quickly. And that's the importance of surveying them. So is there any other examples? I mean, are garden birds in trouble? I mean, with disease, with dependency, with declines, with climate change? Like, what are the, I suppose, as a conservation organisation, what are the challenges, the conservation challenges facing garden birds as a group?
Yeah, so I think greenfinch is the best example. Just to hammer home that point, you know, they were in the top 10 over kind of around 90% of gardens up until around 2005, 2006. Now they're in, last winter, I've just looked at the results from the survey for last winter, they're in less than half of Irish gardens now. And the amount on average that people are seeing has halved. So their numbers have really dropped through the floor. More recently, we're seeing some of the other finch species declining a little bit, and more so in urban areas than in rural areas. So chaffinch and siskin and stuff like that as well. So they will be some trends to keep an eye on. The survey is a really good way. So things like climate change, I can't think of anything that maybe has fallen through the floor like greenfinch has because of climate change. But certainly we see the impact of heavy snow and stuff like that maybe wouldn't have gotten as much of in the past. The beast from the east, you know, really changed garden bird numbers temporarily over that winter and even into the following winter. A year or two ago, we had quite a cold spring, unseasonably cold, that would have caught out a lot of common breeding birds. And while those species are still common, they definitely took a hit. And the more that starts to happen, you know, the more impacts we're going to see and you know, the more populations are going to be under pressure.
So it's clear that assessing these populations over a long period of time is an important thing to do. It's often the first indication we have that something is going out of kilter, or can back up findings we've had in other maybe more detailed but more focused surveys, such as the Countryside Bird Survey. So in terms of a survey like the Irish Garden Bird Survey, it really mobilised something we call citizen science. We're trying to get the power of the many, many bird watchers out there to contribute. What's it all about and why should people give it a go?
The survey started in the late 1980s. It's gone for over 30 years. Up to last winter, we had 2,000 gardens, you know, 2,000 households taking part in the survey. It's really, really simple to take part in if you are the type of person who puts out food for your garden birds and keeps an eye on them over the winter. You know, it's a tiny extra step to write down what you see, send in the results to us, and you can feed into that kind of that bigger picture. So it goes on from the start of December to the end of February. Every week you write down the maximum of each bird species that you see in your garden and you start fresh the next week. So it's very, very simple, very straightforward. It is a great way, I would say, for people to really get to grips with what's going on in their own garden, first of all. It's a great way to learn about your own garden birds because it gives you that extra bit of motivation to keep an eye on them. And as well as that, by you feeding in your garden information and everyone else doing the same, yeah, we get to see those regional, those national trends and keep an eye on how our birds are doing.
If you aren't familiar with the full suite of birds that might come into your garden, like there's a sort of, you know, a little brown job that you just can't sort of nail ID wise, is, I presume, you just don't enter that into your survey. You don't take a guess at it.
Yeah, better off not to guess. But I would say, you know, use the survey as good motivation to really find out what it is. You know, get your bird book out, have a chat with someone else who knows about birds, and you know, between the two, you might be able to decide what it is. Get a photo on your phone and send it into Birdwatch Ireland on Facebook, or send us an email or something like that. I think the survey is really good motivation to, you know, whereas before you might have dismissed it as a little brown job, this is a really good excuse to dig in, find out what it is, and you'll know that forevermore then, you know?
Yeah.
I know that quite a few people who've taken part in the survey over the years have actually told me that having that task to perform really focuses the mind in a special way. They said it brought their ID skills on in leaps and bounds. Whereas if they had just been watching the birds casually, they wouldn't have had the same motivation to find out what the birds were. Also, people told me they got very competitive around it as well. If you get the neighbours and the friends and family roped in, you can get very worked up if they get something that you didn't and people try to outdo each other. Do you find that's a good motivation for people?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, especially, you know, over Christmas and stuff, people will be seeing each other. And, you know, if you're talking around the water cooler in the office or meeting up with the family or something like that, it's great to be able to say, how many goldfinch do you have? Or have you seen any sparrowhawks this winter? Or, you know, what are you noticing that, you know, maybe is new this winter that you didn't have last year? Or, and to compare and contrast, because a lot of gardens might look similar on paper, but every garden is a little bit different. And that's why we need, you know, the more gardens you take part, the more powerful that data set is.
I know you just finished doing your kind of stats, running the numbers from last year and looking at the trends. So tell us who are the winners and the losers in the last sort of roundup.
Yeah, I'd say the winners, as always, it's robin, blackbird and blue tit are in those top three positions. A lot of, you know, it was quite a mild winter last winter, so a lot of species fared similar, I would say, to the year before. Coal tit dropped a couple of positions, and looking back in the last 5 years in particular, their numbers have actually taken a bit of a dip, a surprising dip. I can't quite put my finger on why that is, but that would be a trend to keep an eye on. Greenfinch, 20th place, which is the same position they were in the year before, but they've dropped by 7 or 8%, which is a huge drop in a year. So really worried about them. There are species like wood pigeon and hooded crow that kind of, they're kind of in the middle ranking, somewhere between 10th and 20th place, but kind of gradually moving up the table every year. And then the further down the table you go, you start getting into the slightly rarer species, but some quite interesting stuff there too. Woodpecker, they're in about 5% of gardens now, around 100 gardens out of 2,000 last winter, which, when you consider how recent they are, you know, is a fantastic jump up the table, and they're becoming more and more common across the country. And then brambling as well. It was a very good year for brambling last year, which is a member of the finch family, very similar to chaffinch from Scandinavia. We get small numbers here every winter, but last winter was a particularly good winter for them.
I almost stabbed you last winter with all the brambling you were getting in your garden.
Yeah.
It's still, I looked at your chart there and I see it was non-reported from the GBS survey in Leash, so I wasn't going to, it was very unlikely that I was going to be featured there, but you had a significant amount in your own garden, and it's amazing. They're a very special bird, but I've never seen the bloody things in this country. They're my bogey bird, and yeah, I was more than enough times now I cursed your name in our house last year. It was gas.
Yeah, like they are here in small numbers every year, but really you have to go sifting through big flocks of chaffinch maybe in a local woodland to find them. It's only every couple of winters that they become more common in gardens. But again, that garden bird survey gives you that excuse, that motivation to sift through the chaffinches and the sparrows and stuff like that maybe underneath your feeder to try and pick out that one unusual thing, which might be a brambling.
Do you get many reports of birds of prey in gardens? I know that a lot of people see sparrowhawk, for example. They'd be the most common, I assume, from the survey. But are there any others that would come into gardens?
Yeah, so buzzard would be another species that, you know, when I was growing up, you know, you kind of never thought you'd see a buzzard in Ireland, and all of a sudden they're absolutely everywhere now, and people get them. I get them, you know, calling over my garden and flying over, and I kind of count them for the survey because, you know, they're kind of keeping an eye to see if there's anything to feed on in the garden. Some people are lucky enough to get them perched up on a fence post or a telegraph pole and stuff like that as well. Red kite reintroduced there, you know, 10, 15 years ago, maybe a bit more. See them in Wicklow, you know, gardens in Kildare and Wexford. They haven't spread as much, but they do get picked up. And kestrel as well then. Kestrel, the Garden Bird Survey isn't the ideal survey to tell us about kestrel numbers, but we have seen a decline in reports of them through the Garden Bird Survey that has been mirrored in CBS, the Countryside Bird Survey, and the work our colleague John Lusby does as well. So, yeah.
You mentioned woodpeckers, which are obviously a very recent, addition to the avifauna in our gardens, and buzzards have spread sort of in the last sort of, you know, number of decades. People wouldn't have been seeing them in their gardens. Is there any other sort of new kids on the block that people should keep an eye out for that are spreading their way and likely to come into a garden near us someday soon?
I think woodpecker is the big one, and the birds of prey. The really unusual one in the last couple of years has been the ring-necked parakeet, which has been seen in a couple of gardens around Dublin. Obviously, a very unusual bird, a very novel bird, a very colourful bird to come into your garden. And I'm sure it was a mix of delight and kind of amusement by the people who spotted them. Obviously, a little bit concerning. They're kind of an invasive species. You know, there is potential for them to impact our native birds, our native breeding species here. So that's one we will keep an eye on as well. But again, shows the value of having something like the Garden Bird Survey, where those birds get picked up and reported to Birdwatch Ireland, you know, before they become a problem.
When you have thousands of people keeping an eye out very keenly in their gardens for birds all winter long, there must occasionally be something extremely rare that turns up. Anything that sticks in the mind recently that's been found in Irish gardens?
Last winter there was a rustic bunting, and Niall, you'll know a lot more about rustic buntings than I will, but a rustic bunting, which was the first for the survey, I think was only the 22nd or 23rd record of rustic bunting on the island of Ireland. That was in a garden in County Down. A guy there absolutely delighted to get it. I think he welcomed a lot of bird watchers who were very eager to travel and to come see that as well. But yeah, just goes to show what might be out there.
Yeah, a species that you wouldn't normally expect to see in Ireland. It's very much a northern boreal breeder across Scandinavia and Asia. So a species that, yeah, as you said, a rare vagrant to Ireland. Quite remarkable that would turn up on the survey. I suppose a lot of it depends as well on in a garden what kind of habitat you have in your garden. So there's questions in the survey about that too, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's a very, very straightforward survey, and, you know, you can download the PDF from our website, or you'll see it in your Wings magazine. a few basic questions about the type of garden you have. Roughly, what size is it? You know, roughly, are you in an urban area, a suburban area, or a rural area? Because we do see quite significant differences between those types of gardens. So it's good to kind of gather that information as well. And we see quite significant regional differences as well. So if you're in Leinster, you know, the average birds you're getting in your garden, you're going to get your robins, your blackbirds, your blue tits, and so will someone in Galway or in Cork or something like that. But, you know, as we go further down the list, there are, you know, differences depending on where your garden is, how big your garden is, you know, what type of garden you've got. So, yeah, it's important to capture that information for our analysis as well.
Tell me, not so much trends, but tell me like some annual patterns that people might expect to see. Like, I know one of my favourite things to wait for and expect is that sort of that spring spike in siskins that show up in your garden.
Yeah, absolutely. So every year it really, really frustrates me. There's always one or two people who submit their sheet, send it into us on Birdwatch Ireland and say, these are the numbers I had in the first week of the survey. And sure, it's the same every week. So there you go. And I'm just thinking, ah. You know, if they just kept doing it, you know, take a part in the survey, you will very much realise that actually the birds, you know, it seems on the surface to be the same every week. But actually, there's quite significant changes as you go past Christmas and the weather gets a bit colder and the natural food sources out in the wider countryside get depleted and, you know, more and more birds will come into your garden. So you will notice if we just did the survey for a week in December, or if we did the survey for a week in February, you would get very different results from the exact same gardens. So that's the importance of doing it week on week, and we do see these trends. You will get more species and more individuals in your garden at the end of the winter than you will at the start. But yes, siskin and to a lesser extent redpoll as well are fantastic examples of that. You'll get maybe 5 or 6 times as many siskins in gardens across the country by the end of the survey as in the start. And, you know, we can see that a very gradual, you know, slow build up to Christmas into January, and then numbers really, really jump into February, and people are reporting 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, if you're really lucky, siskins in the garden. I know in my own garden, a couple of years ago, I had, I think, you know, 5 or 6 up to the end of February, and then into March, I got up to 50, and I was, you know, it's always, people do the survey, and then you're kind of kicking yourself when something shows up the week before the survey starts or the week after the survey ends.
I'm curious, for people who don't actually have a garden themselves, is there a way that they can participate? Is there anywhere else they could count birds?
Yeah, there's more and more people doing it, you know, in their place of work. So you might have, you know, a couple of trees outside and you can hang a couple of feeders, and between you and your colleagues, you can keep an eye out the window. It's not the type of survey you need to park yourself by the window for 3 or 4 hours at a time. You can be walking by, filling the kettle, something like that. Take a glance, write down what you're seeing. So more and more people doing it at work. And again, that's a great way to chat to people and get more people involved as well.
There's a really nice work example in the Heritage Council in Kilkenny, and Lorcan Scott, the biodiversity officer there, he's got his list and he keeps it on a window with one of those sort of electric blue markers, and everyone can see it down in the canteen. And, you know, there's an awful lot of sort of built heritage experts in the Heritage Council wouldn't maybe think twice about birds, but he's got everyone enthused and engaged now, and they're all kind of competing, and it's a bit of a window list, and they've got their bird feeders outside. And yeah, it's really nice. So it's a fun thing you can do. And we have a little bit of competition here as well with our bird list and the window list here in the office, which is, it's a nice thing to do.
That's it. You know, as you said, you know, it's a really enjoyable survey to do, and we get more data out of it. More people get interested in garden birds. So it's kind of a win-win all around, you know.
And can schools do it?
Yeah, schools can do it as well. You know, it's obviously you're going to be off for a couple of weeks, but still great. I'd say start putting up your feeders maybe in November, attract a few birds in. And yeah, great way to get kids to keep an eye out the window, see what's there, and, you know, do year after year, and you can track the changes as well.
And just to say, if any teachers are interested, we have lots of resources all about garden birds and other aspects of wildlife on our website, birdwatchireland.ie, that are available there for download. Lots of lesson plans and everything. So teachers, if you're interested, please do check that out, because you'll find a whole wealth of resources there for you.
We can't get away from this, and it's such a nice topic and subject, but not to turn it too negative for too long, but it would be remiss to ignore it. But do people need to be concerned about bird flu in relation to their garden birds this winter?
In Birdwatch Ireland, we are going to be keeping a very close eye on bird flu. It's, at the moment, as we're talking now, impacted a lot of our seabirds, gannets in particular. We are expecting that it's going to impact our wintering water birds, our ducks and our waders and our geese. I don't foresee it being an issue with garden birds. I just don't see the transmission happening there between seabirds or water birds and garden birds. So keep feeding as normal. The advice is always to keep an eye out. If you see any sick birds, stop feeding for a couple of weeks and wash your feeders. That's more than likely going to be something like trichomonosis, which is affecting the finches. If that advice changes, Birdwatch Ireland will be very quick to let people know. But at the moment, I don't have any concerns about garden birds, really.
And certainly doing the survey, there's no risk whatsoever because you're observing the birds. And the fact is that we might detect changes or problems through surveys like this with long-term impacts on populations as well.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. Absolutely. Getting to the sharp end of it, if people want to help the birds in their garden and get more species, and like, what are your tips on getting more birds into your garden, and how do people sustain the birds in their garden, and just, yeah, give us a bit of a crash course in garden bird sort of care.
I would say, thinking short term, the more feeders you put out, the more different types of food you put out. You know, that will get you a greater number and diversity of birds in general. Hang them in a few different places around the garden so that all the birds aren't fighting over it. You know, and you'll see what the birds really like. And just a mix of foods generally gets you a mix of birds, some on the ground, some on in feeders and stuff like that. Thinking more long term and in terms of sustainability, you know, I try to recommend to people, maybe when you're doing the survey every year, think of one thing you can change in your garden for this coming year. Something you can plant, something you can put into the garden that would be kind of a permanent feature that might help the birds in the nesting season. It might give them space to nest. It might provide insects and invertebrates, you know, when they're feeding their chicks. It might provide seeds or berries in the autumn, something like that. So just try and think of one thing that you can do, and that'll be much more sustainable, you know, than feeding birds or anything like that. That's thinking long term. So that's the way we should all be thinking.
I had a really nice experience the other morning. I just let the dog out the back door and realised, I'd never observed it before, but we've got this huge elder bush growing up through an old shed in the back garden, and it was dripping with jackdaws that were stripping the berries, but I'd never seen them at that. I mean, it's obviously not beyond them, but I just had never seen them target the elder before at all. And at the minute, there's, as you've both seen just walking around, like, the wider countryside is coming down with apples and hazelnuts and blackberries. So they obviously knew, they're a smart animal, they obviously knew that the elders are at their best and nice and juicy, but it was nice to see.
Yeah, I'm getting a load of wood pigeons in my garden at the moment. It seems to be a huge amount of beech mast and oak and stuff like that as well. And the amount of pigeons, you know, I would have killed for a wood pigeon in the garden over the last couple of seasons of the survey, and now, you know, places full of them.
That's the beauty of the survey, I think. There can be some birds actually quite common in the wider countryside, but you're still dying to get your first one recorded in the garden. I remember being absolutely over the moon getting a meadow pipit in my garden. It's a bird I'd never expected to see there. And that was honestly like seeing like a major rarity to me, even though I could go just a couple of miles down the road and find loads of meadow pipits. But having it new for the survey, new for the garden, it really was great.
Yeah, even if it's just there for a couple of seconds, yeah, you get that kind of adrenaline rush that'll keep you going, you know, over the winter, yeah.
I have a bogey bird in the garden as well. It's really weird. I get willow wobblers in the garden, but chiff chaff won't come in. But there's one just in my neighbour's garden. And my neighbour's garden is pretty, like, not wild compared to mine. It's pretty sort of, you know, lawn and a little laurel hedge. But chiff chaff fancied it over there for some reason. And just trying to coax them across. But maybe there's too many willow wobblers. I don't know. Speaking about willow wobblers, when they come up and chiff chaffs and black caps, there's a lot more species overwintering these days. Have we been detecting chiff chaffs or willow wobblers overwintering at all through Garden Bird Survey?
Yeah, chiff chaff is definitely one that gets picked up. I think some people put it down maybe as willow warbler occasionally, but I think it's much more likely to be a chiff chaff. But yeah, kind of, you know, they're low down on the table, but more and more people seeing them, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting to speculate what might be motivating that, because that's a change we're seeing in over the course of this survey with black caps as well. The numbers have been going up, and these are birds that the field guides originally said these migrate down to the Mediterranean region into North Africa. So it says to me that obviously this survey is one of the ways we can detect these impacts, perhaps through climate change, perhaps through food availability, who knows, but it's certainly something going on, and the survey's opened our eyes to that.
Yeah, I think, you know, ideally what you want is a survey in place before things start changing, because then you can measure, you know, where you started and what's happened since. You know, if we started surveying now for chiff-chaffs and gardens over winter, we would have known that kind of zero starting point, if you know what I mean.
One of the things that people sometimes say to me when I'm urging them to do the survey, when I'm giving a talk or something, I always say, give the Irish Garden Bird Survey a go. And there's always people who say to me, oh, there's no point because I really don't have any birds in my garden. I don't see anything there. And, well, first of all, of course, there are some there. But the other side of it, that's data that we need. The absence of birds is also valuable survey data.
Yeah, I think on average, you know, the average garden gets somewhere between 15 and 25 gardens if you're keeping a good eye over the course of the winter. But absolutely, we need big gardens, we need tiny gardens. We have some people taking part who just have a balcony and, you know, they have a feeder hung up on the balcony. It's all data. It's all feeding into this big picture that we're trying to piece together. And we want the data set to be representative. So we don't want just every big garden in rural areas. That's going to very much bias the results. So, you know, we want a bit of everything in there.
Any tips, Niall, for people? So Brian gave some tips about how to get birds and sustain them in your garden. Any tips on how to improve your ID over the sort of the course of things?
I think that the number one thing I would recommend people to do is to get to know the common species well, because then at least you have a benchmark you can assess other species against. So if you, for example, get to know the blackbird very well, and then you see a bird that's similar in shape but speckled on the front, brown on the back in your garden, that's most likely going to be a thrush. And if it's smaller than a blackbird, most likely it'll be the song thrush. Larger than a blackbird, it'll be the missel thrush. And then you'll know two new species that you can then use as a frame of reference for other birds as well. So a bird like the robin, everyone knows the robin. So if you see a bird coming into your garden that is it smaller than a robin? Is it more slender? Look at the beak as well. The beak can tell you a lot about how a bird lives, and it's a great identification tip. And over time, you'll learn that there are actually more species coming into your garden probably than you expected. And once you get familiar with them, it's actually easier to tell them apart than you might think. Bear in mind that for many species, there's a difference between the males and the females, which is often a pitfall that people will have. And certainly, at least in the early part of the winter, you may still see some birds that aren't fully in adult plumage yet. Some of the juvenile birds may still be showing traces of their young plumage. They might look different from the adults as well. But over time, the more you do it and the more you go out, the more you look these birds up in books, the more you'll learn about them. And before long, honestly, it becomes second nature. Really, it's practice makes perfect, and it's a lot of fun doing it. And having a task to complete, like the Irish Garden Bird Survey, it focuses the mind in a very specific way and makes the task even easier, I think.
Brian, remind us one last time when the survey kicks off, where you can find the survey forms and how people can enter.
Yeah, so everything is on the website. It's all very straightforward. You'll see it all there. And if you want kind of tips about your garden birds and stuff like that, you'll see that there too. I think it's the last Monday in November. It's kind of going into the first week of December. That's when it starts. Goes to the end of February. If you're gone away over Christmas visiting family and friends, doesn't matter if you miss a couple of weeks. Do as many weeks as you possibly can. And yeah, enjoy it and you know, spread the word as well. Just to say as well, I want to really thank Ballymaloe. So Ballymaloe House, Ballymaloe Cookery School and Ballymaloe Foods. They've sponsored the survey for the last couple of years. It's been a big help. It's helped us put more time and effort and to grow the survey as well. So really, really thankful to them. And obviously to everyone who takes part in the survey year after year. There's some people doing it for well over 20 years. And there's people who send in little donations as well with their survey form. You don't have to, but you know, it's very much appreciated when people do. So thanks to all those people as well.
Yeah, that's great. These things aren't possible without our sponsors and help and support from everyone and everyone doing it. So, yeah, no, thanks again. And Brian, thanks for coming in and talking to us about it and garden birds and everything else. It's really fascinating. I'm really looking forward to it, I have to say. And my kids are of an age where they can recognise the birds and stuff. So I'm really sort of proud of it and going to get them involved. You'll be getting plenty of pics from me every Sunday of us out watching the birds so and filling their feeders. So expect that. It's something to look forward to. So bird of the week, we mentioned siskin briefly and their spike in the early spring. I'm fascinated by them. Beautiful little creatures. They're a finch. Niall, describe them for us.
Really charming little garden birds. The first thing you notice about them is that they're really small. So when you're looking through the different pages in a field guide to birds, sometimes it can be hard to see how the birds might be in relative size to each other. The siskin's one of the smallest birds that's going to come to your garden bird feeder. The male and female look quite different, but they all have some degree of yellow, greeny yellow colour on them. A lot of streaking, especially on the flanks, and the female's on the head as well. The male, though, is quite striking. The adult male has this black cap on top of his head, a little black sort of chin patch, and he has this lovely greeny yellow wash throughout his body, and they have these lovely little coloured stripes, yellowy stripes in their wings as well. So a really attractive little bird. One of the easiest ways to identify them when they come to your peanut feeder or your seed feeder is that they're usually upside down. Their head is usually facing towards the ground, and it's thought that that's an adaptation to their normal habitat, which is feeding up in the cones of spruces and pines up in forest. So they actually go perch on those and reach down to get in underneath to get to prise those open and get the seeds out. So they have the same strategy when they come to your garden. Now, it's a bird that, certainly in my garden, I think this is borne out by the Irish Garden Bird Survey as well. It's one that I don't expect to see until the latter part of the winter into early spring. They're usually a late visitor into gardens. It can fluctuate depending on how severe the weather has been. But the theory behind that is that they tend to spend most of their time in forests, particularly in coniferous plantations and mixed forests as well, feeding on those seeds. And when that wild crop of seeds is exhausted, then they're forced to come down into gardens and maybe at lower altitudes. And that's when we tend to see them. So it's a bird that a lot of people almost give up hope of seeing in the Irish Garden Bird Survey, and then the last couple of weeks all of a sudden there's an influx into the garden, and when they come they can come in good numbers, but it's always a thrill to see them.
They're smashing. I associate them with alder for some reason. I just always seem to come across them hanging out of the alder catkins, that's where I'd often pick them up. Let's listen to their call. I think someone told me before that they think it sounds very sort of whingy, almost like sad, mournful call, but I'll see what people think for themselves.
Yeah, whingy, mournful. I can see where they're coming from with that. It's certainly a distinctive sound. It's subtle but distinctive. So when you're walking along through a woodland, or when you're even out in your garden, maybe the first indication you have siskins in the area would be that call. Because very often they're high up in the trees. They really don't want to come down low, other than to come to your garden feeders. Otherwise, they associate them with the tree canopy mainly. So they can be hard birds for most of the year to get a good view of. They're with us year round in Ireland. We do get some influx in the winter months of birds from elsewhere in Europe, perhaps. But the Irish population seems, as far as we know, more or less resident, though they do move around the country a bit in response to food availability. And putting out food within your garden, particularly peanuts and seeds, that's a great way to help them. And you get lots of feeding tips on what to put out for your birds at birdwatchireland.ie, where all the information about garden birds can be found.
Do you know about their nesting habits? Like, are they in hedgerows? Are they up in those Scots pines?
They mainly nest in relatively mature trees. I mean, beggars can't be choosers, and habitat can be hard for a lot of these birds to find. But they tend to be in the trees. Like a lot of finches, what they make is, it's a wonderful woven cup nest. It's not a bird that will nest inside a nest box. They will never do that. They have an open cup, usually in quite a sheltered area. It can be hard to spot, often quite high up. So very often the way you might find it or see it is you'd see the parent birds flying back and forth with food, and that's an indication the chick would be there. But actually seeing inside the nest could be very difficult. We wouldn't recommend, obviously, trying to approach nests anyway, so enjoy those from a good distance. And they really are very small little structures. Like most finch nests, that you'd be surprised how tiny the little cup is, and you realise the whole little brood of chicks been raised in there by their mum and dad. It really is quite amazing. And also how strong that nest is as well. They weave them together using materials they find. They'll often, like other finches, they'll often use things like sheep wool and horsehair to put them together. Occasionally with finches too, you'll even find things like strands of baling twine worked into them, and siskins are no different in that regard. But they really are densely packed, very durable, really soft, really lightweight, and really amazing little constructions.
I never forget how strikingly small a chaffinch nest was I found, with five mature sort of chicks in it, and it just looked like, they almost looked like big fat cuckoos hanging out of it. It just did not look like they were in the right spot at all. Siskins are fab, so people, and winter is the best time to see them, so again we're on the money there, so keep an eye out for them in the across the winter and the early spring. And they often form like mixed flocks with other finches as well, so you can hear, if you sort of see a big mixed flock, a noisy flock of finches moving high through the conifers, get your binoculars out and see if you can spot a few siskins among them.
Yeah, I often associate them with redpolls, a bird that's actually similar size and similar build, and in the winter they do seem to flock together. You may even have them on your feeders simultaneously. The redpoll's a little brown finch with a red patch on the forehead, so they look quite different from the siskins, but similar in size, quite similar in behaviour. They also like the alder catkins as well, along with the siskins. And that's the beauty of life for a lot of finches, especially outside the breeding season, is they can form these mixed flocks because they all have subtly different shaped and sized beaks, so they don't always come into direct competition for food. So they have all the benefits of living together, you know, keeping together for warmth, perhaps more eyes looking out for predators, without necessarily coming into direct competition for food. So that's how finches have evolved, these different beaks, and that's why siskins are so happy to be seen around other finches.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, no, great stuff. Look, really enjoyed that episode. First episode back again, last season of the year. Great to have Brian on board. Next week we talk to the Spider-Man, Collie Ennis, as seen on The Late Late Show, and I'm looking forward to that episode too. So thanks a million, lads.
So all you arachnophobes out there, you've been warned. We're hoping to change your mind about spiders if you are an arachnophobe, by the way. They really are amazing creatures and very important as bird food as well. So from that angle, it's important too. So just to say, if you've been interested in anything we've been saying here today, and if you'd like to take part in the Irish Garden Bird Survey, if you go to our website, birdwatchireland.ie, you'll find all the details there. And if you're not already a member of Birdwatch Ireland, and we'd love to convince you to join. You'll find all the details there as well. And as a charity, it makes a big difference to us and to the future of conservation and birds and other wildlife in Ireland. And just to finish by saying, In Your Nature is produced in partnership with the Heritage Offices of Laois and Offaly County Councils, supported by the Heritage Council and the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, and is edited by Ciarán O'Connor.